Today's sponsor, W Films. W Films is a full-service video production company located in Lewis, Delaware. Need help getting your message out on social media? How about creating a brand film for your company's website? W Films experts can help you create the perfect video and help you get the social media attention you've been looking for. W Films also specializes in marketing materials for real estate. They can provide cinematic video tour, HDR photography, and a fully immersive 360-degree tour to help your property get sold faster and for more money. To find out more, go to wfilmsmedia.com or call 302-569-0725. 302-569-0725. Everyone has a story. Let us tell yours. All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Check them out. They definitely appreciate it. How's everybody this fine morning, August 10th, 2021? Beautiful day. Got up. Everything's beautiful. Had rain for the last couple days, which we definitely needed. I've shared before, rain definitely picks up my mood. You know, it's been hot, it's been dry, grass is all burned up. I think I shared the other day, they announced it was going to rain, and I was like, I doubt it. Well, it definitely did, and it rained yesterday. So a friend of mine posted a picture. He's a super up in the, I think he's an assistant, I don't know, but he works at the golf course, local golf course, 5.1 inches. Damn, that is a flood. I'm not even sure if that's even right, but I thought that's what it said on his Facebook post. He runs a golf course, and the bunkers are just like little pools. And, I remember those days. Those were the, prior to doing this, I used to be in the golf course industry. Got a degree from Rutgers for turf management, and so that was my business, was pumping bunkers. You know, I spent all this time at school, and in the end, bunker pumps, sand rakes, I feel bad for them. Plus, they announced this morning that it's supposed to be like the hottest week of the summer. I actually thought summer was kind of over. This happens every year about this time. We get a change in the weather. It cools down a bit. Just the 10th of August, right? It's wrapping up. So I'm like, summer's over. Well, they announced that this week's going to be the hottest week of the summer. So it's apparently not over, and it's going to be hot. So hopefully everybody will be safe wherever you might be. If you're here, buckle up. So, good morning. It is another day, another grateful day to be sober in this tough world out there. And I went to a meeting last night, the Monday night meeting I went to, and I actually was asked if I would set up front and lead, which was really cool. I hadn't done that in a while. I've been doing this a long time, setting up front, not a big deal, but I can tell you, I got a little nervous, I haven't sat up front for a while, through the COVID and actually no meetings. I went from basically the beginning of the pandemic to just maybe 10 weeks ago, I hadn't been to a meeting at all. I think I did go to one meeting somewhere in the middle there out in Long Neck, but for the most part, no Zoom meetings. So it was super great to get back to meetings. And so to be asked to sit up front was cool. And, but I was definitely nervous. This is that, a great example of when self and humility, and it was funny that it was basically on the seventh step, which is, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. And I've been talking about it. And so when the person asked me if I would sit up front, I was like, absolutely. I've been studying this. I'm educated in this step, and I'd love to chat about it. And of course, you sit down and they start going through the opening of the meeting, and my mind's racing. What am I going to say? And I start thinking about things to say. And then at one point, I'm like, forget it. I don't know what I'm going to say. So it's just, it's crazy, but it's it's a reminder of what self, ego, whatever you choose to call it. I call it self, me, but ego. ego and self are like, oh man, you're going to fuck this up. Oh, you are going to screw up. Your message is going to be bad. You're not going to know what you're talking about, yada, yada, yada. And then I start to, you know, second guess myself, and anxiety sets in, and fear, and, you know, all this shit. But the reality is that, you know, there's no getting out of it. I'm sitting in the chair, and fear and whatever. And then we finally, because the way this meeting works is we usually read the step, and then the speaker or whoever is sitting up front speaks for 5 to 10 minutes on the topic, and then we open it up for discussion. And so I'm reading the step with everybody, and then we get down to the last word, and then she's like, I've asked my friend Tom if he would share, and I was like, okay. Hello, my name is Tom. I'm an alcoholic. And proceeded to just kind of share a little of my story and just my thoughts. And what I did share about was really, and I've been thinking about it quite a bit, shared a lot about it a lot, but just the different state of mind or frame of mind that I was in, you know, when I came into this program, March 31st, 1997. You know, that was a long time ago. That was a completely different guy, you know, and I shared in the meeting last night that, you know, I spent a long time trying to be sober, and because that's why we come here, right? Because we have a problem with our sobriety. So our main goal, or my main goal at the time, was to just be sober, which in the definition I think is like to be without drink, to be free of drink, and that's all I wanted, you know. At the time, you know, looking back on it, I don't even know if that's what I wanted. I don't think that that's what I wanted. I think I just wanted to stop getting caught at drinking. Because at that point in my life, that's really, those were the problems. You know, I could sneak and drink and, you know, shuck and jive and pull it off and get away with it for a while, always knowing in the back of my mind that eventually I was going to get caught at it again. And, you know, when you're a person that's living that kind of lifestyle and you're just kind of living between catches, you know, and when that happens, there's a few solutions. One, I'm sorry, right? That's usually the first one. I'm sorry. This will never happen again. I screwed up. I'm sorry. You know, that's your first attempt. And depending on how bad and how unmanageable your life has become to everybody else, sometimes that works. All right, you know, all right, I believe you. I'm sorry, I'll never do that again. Work's been tough, or family's been tough, or I've been worried about this or that, so I chose to drink. It's all bullshit, you know. I mean, speaking for me, you know, it was all bullshit. I just wanted to drink. I'm an alcoholic. But, you know, depending on how many of these catches had taken place, you know, maybe that might get me through it. I'm sorry, it won't happen again. I need to get back to meetings. And then you have your second level of being caught, which I went through, which is rehab, right? That's usually, I don't know how many sorries and, you know, this won't happen again has to happen. 1, 2, 3, maybe. And then you shift into the next zone of rehab or, you know, usually it's rehab, jail, institution, right? And so maybe we end up going to a rehab for 30 days. That's a tough one because we basically can't drink, obviously. But as soon as we enter the door, we have regret. You know, I talk to people all the time about a child or a friend who, you know, has their life has become unmanageable to everybody else. And then they decide, you know, after however many sorries, that they're going to go to rehab. And then, you know, and it's going to be the big solution, the big group hug. Yes, we've done it. We've gotten you to go to rehab. And the person gets to rehab. And then the next day they're like, I want to go home. Get me out of here. I can't take it here. You know, I'll go to meetings. The negotiation starts. And I've been there. You know, I've been to rehab a few times. Jail, that's the third phase. You know, then jail starts. You know, getting arrested. Maybe we get bailed out. Maybe we negotiate our way out of jail once, maybe twice. And then eventually we go to jail. And, you know, that's usually a wake-up call. I've been to jail. I was getting sober in there. I was going to meetings, you know. But this would expose a lot of shit. You know, I'm a liar. I have no desire to get sober. I'll connive and worm my way out of every situation. And, you know, it's also because I'm surrounded by a group of people that put up with my shit, you know, that want to believe, that want to be there, they want to help. But they start to, you know, get sick of it. Your life becomes unmanageable to them. And then, you know, I went to jail and I was going to get, going to be sober and that's it. And I come out of jail and get high, right? I mean, how many times does this happen? So now at this point, you know, we've lost everything. We've lost all family, lost probably hope, you know. And, you know, you finally get to that point where the rubber meets the road. You know, nobody's left. Family's done. Friends are done. Work is done. You have nothing. And then there's that, you know, then there's that opportunity, right? The first real opportunity that looks like there is no other options. You know, when my brother got sober, my dad basically told him, hey, you're done. We're done. Good luck. You don't need to call me and tell me how good you're doing. I don't want to hear about it. You don't need to. He said, you can write me a letter you want if you celebrate a year. I don't care. Write it, don't write it, you're done, goodbye. And my brother, you know, finally walked off into the sunset and got sober. You know, all his options were done. But even after that, you know, even after we get sober, and that kind of refers me back to the beginning of this story, you know, when I came into this program, I was here to get sober. I was here to free myself of alcohol. And, you know, it works, you know. I wasn't drinking. I was, everybody was happy. It was a miracle. But the problem is that I wasn't working on any of the stuff that creates the serenity, that creates the love for being sober. You know, I used to say you got to fall in love with being sober more than you have to be afraid of drinking. And that's where the serenity side of this starts coming in. And, you know, the first three steps, you know, we admitted. When I read the first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. All I heard was admitted alcohol. I was great at it. I'm sorry. I could admit it. All right, you got me, right? Finally, I could, you know, when I was 15, I would hold on longer. I would lie longer. But at this age, I'm like, finally, you got me, right? And, but that's the, you know, that's the sober side of it. Now it's about trying to figure out how to stay in love with being sober, you know, in love with it. And, you know, those first three steps, you know, as a person today, I read that step as, you know, it takes a group, admitted the first probably humble thing that I've done, that we were powerless. And when it comes to that first drink, I am absolutely powerless. When it comes to the second drink, I do have power when it comes to the first drink at this point. You know, maybe not at early on, but at this point, I have power over the first drink. But once the first drink starts, I'm powerless. And then our lives have become unmanageable to everybody else. You know, I had to be real honest about that. You know, it would take years before I would learn to look back at that and say, listen, you got sober because you had no options. You were just saving your ass. Don't fool yourself to think that you were really trying to do the next right thing because you weren't. Which is fine. But at some point, I had to recognize that. And so to talk about the seventh step, you know, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings, which was, you know, I looked it up. To me, and this is just my opinion, there is a difference between character defects and shortcomings. Character defects, to me, are the big ones, you know, the deadly sins, right? The gluttony, the lying, the stealing, the cheating, the sex. All those are character defects. Those are the ones that, you know, people think about when they think about you. You know, but the shortcomings are private. Those are the private things when nobody's looking. And, a gentleman spoke up at the meeting and shared and said he always believed that Bill W. just didn't want to use the same word twice, so instead of character defects, he changed it to shortcomings. And I do believe that there is a difference. That's my opinion. Because, listen, you know, throwing gum on the street is not a character defect. That's just me being kind of an asshole, a private asshole. But character defects is saying, and someone going, hey, did you just throw gum in the street? And you being, no, and lying about it. There is the difference. And but that's for me. You know, that's what I think. I need to think that way. I need to recognize it for me to stay in the right direction, headed towards serenity. Oops. So I was reading this, you know, this is interesting, and it, you know, it's kind of about what I was saying. It says, for us, the process of gaining new perspective was unbelievably painful. It was only by repeated humiliation that we were forced to learn something about humility. It was only at the end of a long road marked by successive defeats and humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency that we began to feel humility as something more than a condition of groveling despair. Groveling despair. I'm completely familiar with groveling despair. Every newcomer in Alcoholics Anonymous told, soon realizing for himself that his humble admission of powerlessness over alcohol is his first step toward liberation from its paralyzing grip. Yeah, and that's what it says in the first step. We admitted. Probably the first humble thing that I'd ever done. I just didn't realize that I had done that. You know, I as a sober person, I looked at it as, you know, how can I get myself out of this freaking jam? But as a person that seeks out serenity, as a person that seeks out happiness and peace on a 24-hour, a 12-hour, a one-hour-a-day kind of thing, you know, starting to understand that the humility is what I lacked. I'm a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. That's my problem. I can't drink. I can't do speed. I can't hang out with a lot of women. I can't spend too much money. I have all these things, but my core, the foundation of my crappy little fucking cabin is that I'm a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. You know, I shared in the meeting, you know, that person that showed up March 31st, 1997 is not the same person that's here today. You know, I'll celebrate 13 years in December. You know, I don't have a drinking problem today. But today I woke up and I'm still a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. It's still a problem today. But I'm aware of it and I recognize it. And I recognize some of the traits that start showing up when it starts to show its ugly face. You know, I get upset, I get mad, I get frustrated, I get short-tempered. You know, these are all things that are inconveniences to my self-centered life. And, you know, when I'm white-knuckling it, both hands gripping the steering wheel, you know, and I've talked about it, you know, my bad place is traffic, unfortunately. And, you know, I can go into the drive to work with the best of spirits, the best of intentions, and get to work the most frustrated and annoyed person in the world. And it's because I'm self-centered. I want everybody to get off the road. I want to drive to work all by myself, nobody else. And it's just not reality. So learning, you know, to pray, to say, hey, you're just being inconvenienced. Shit's just not going your way, Tom. You know, you can choose to be a grumpy old asshole over it, or you can say, hey, I'm cool. You know, I can start looking at the positives. I'm grateful I have a car, right? I'm grateful, you know, what kind of person would I have been 200 years ago? You know, without a car, you know, if it was all about the horse, you know, what would be my complaint then? You know, this horse is too slow. I can't afford a good horse. I don't know. But I have to start recognizing the positive things that are going on in my life. You know, the fact that I even have a car, that I even have a job. You know, considering the person I was March 31st, 1997 to the person I am today, I could spend a whole day writing how grateful I am for that. Right? It isn't all about me not getting what I want. And that's how my life has always been. So it was great. It was super awesome to do that meeting last night. I'm, you know, very grateful for that meeting. You know, I was, we were talking about how long the meeting's been back, and I was said, oh, well, I came back the second half of this 12th step, so that was 1 week, and now we're on the 8th step, plus we did the first step, so that's 8, 9, 10, you know, 10 or so weeks. And the lady goes, oh, we've been back since Memorial Day. And I was like, oh. So I just didn't make it to the meeting. Let's see. Let me read. Let's do a reading real quick and see what we can figure out. All right. August 10th. Redoubling our efforts. August 10th. Redoubling our efforts. To a degree, he had already done this when taking moral inventory. But now the time has come when he ought to redouble his efforts to see how many people he has hurt and in what ways. Let me read that again. To a degree, he has already done this when taking moral inventory. But now the time has come when he ought to redouble his efforts to see how many people he has hurt and in what ways. 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, page 77. As I continue to grow in sobriety, I become more aware of myself as a person of worth. In the process, I am better able to see others as persons, and then this comes the realization that these were my people whom I had hurt in my drinking days. I didn't just lie. I lied about Tom. That's funny. The guy's name is Tom. I didn't just cheat, I cheated Joe. And what were seemingly impersonal acts were really personal affronts, because it was the people, people of worth, whom I had harmed. I need to do something about the people I have hurt so that I may enjoy a peaceful sobriety. Yeah. You know, it's a great way. I mean, when I first came in the program, it was all, I wanted to get an A. I wanted to find every single person. I didn't really care the point. I didn't understand the reasoning behind it. To be sober, all I cared about was the quantity. You know, but as a person of serenity, I'm more about the quality and not the quantity. And I think that's important. You know, one of the things that I shared about in the meeting, and I think it's a, you know, I think it's a big deal for people that are trying to get sober, is to get a sponsor, a temporary sponsor. There was a newcomer there last night. I asked him, "Do you have a sponsor?" And he says, "No, I'm going to work on it for the next couple of weeks." And I was, and I shared the story of Ron M. when I came into the program, and they came up to the hospital, and they asked me, "Would you like to come down to the meeting?" And I said, "Yes." And that night, Ron M. said, "Listen, I'm going to be your temporary sponsor." And, you know, gave me some rules to follow. And at that point, I was so beat up, and I was so, I was so humiliated that I was available. You know, it talks about that, the humiliation over, after humiliation, I was beat down so far that I was open to anything. And that's where the miracle takes place, right? You get so beat up, you become available. And then you start to get better and you start to feel better and you put some time between your last episode and all of a sudden you start to forget, and then, you know, self creeps back in and the whole thing fucking goes to hell in a handbasket. But if you can find somebody like a Ron M. to be a good example, because at the time, you know, and I talked about this yesterday, you know, comparing myself to, who am I supposed to compare myself to, you know? I don't know who said it or where I read it, but they said that if you want to see what kind of person you are, look at the people that you hang out with. And that makes a lot of sense to me. And at that time, I was comparing myself to the bottom of the barrel kind of folks. So when a Ron in comes into your life and becomes your temporary sponsor, and you know, you start to watch him do the walk, right? And start to watch him do the talk. And you know, the behavior, shaking hands, how can I help? Thank yous. I appreciate you making the coffee. Thanks for being here. Thanks for getting the meeting started. Thanks for sharing. You know, these weren't things I was saying 2 weeks prior, a month prior. You know, there was none of this. How can I be of service? You know, and I wasn't saying that. I was watching Ron. You know, you walk in with your sponsor and he says, you know, you watch him shake hands. And then, of course, you shake hands after. How are you? Thank you for having the meeting. And I remember when I started learning that I could say thank you to people, you know, without wanting something, like, you know, because I got something, I was able to say thank you. This was about just being with some gratitude. Thank you. You know, I remember thanking the guy for opening the meeting. Thanks for opening the meeting. And I don't know why I said it. I just know Ron M. said it. So I was mimicking Ron M. But you start to learn, and these are new, just like you learn how to, you know, double fist a drink. I mean, you know, we learn from other people, and we become, these behaviors start to grow as from other examples, and it works the same way. You know, this behavior got me in the hole. You have to find new behaviors to get me out of the hole. And saying thank you, shaking hands, showing up early, may I help? Can I put the chairs out? You know, starting to be a human again. You know, I was talking to a person that was in a relationship, whatever it was, it's none of my business, but I know in the end, you know, it was bad. And this person started seeing somebody else, and they told me, I can't believe how amazing this person is. And I'm like, well, you know, I've said it before. Listen, if you live in the shit long enough, and you finally come out, you think that the air is from God, when actually it's just normal air. And I think that this person's been going through. It's like, I just can't believe how amazing this is. And I'm like, yeah, well, before you, you know, put a crown on this person, just recognize that you've been in kind of a funky place. And that will eventually start to wear away. You know, you get sober, and I remember going to the first meeting and shaking hands and just thinking, oh my God, this place is amazing. It's amazing. And really, I've just been living in the shit so long that, you know, anything other than that looked like it was from God. Have a great day. Bye.